Welcome to Postview.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Rural Communities Initiative Economic Development Webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, May 12, 2009. I would now like to turn the call over to Jackie Schmidt. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Rural Economic Development Webinar on Small Business Development in Rural Communities. Before we begin, I just want to go over a few logistical points, and then we'll start the presentations. The first is that there will be a live question and answer session at the end of the presentation. The operator will ask if anyone has a question through the phone after the presentations are complete. And he'll explain how to do that at that time. We'll also be using live meeting to ask questions. If you think of a question that you'd like to ask during the middle of the presentations, you can send that question in using live meeting. This way, you don't have to do it. You don't have to wait till the end, and you can just you can ask several questions. To do that, if you look at the screen in front of you, there are three quick steps. The first is to click at the top on the screen where it says Q&A. And type your question in, and then hit ask. After that, two things will happen. That'll get sent to us, and we will send you a response to let you know we've gotten your question. When we've received your question and you've gotten this response back, you are free to ask another question. Also, if you're looking at the screen and it looks a little small, you can hit the F5 button on your keyboard, and that will make the presentation full screen. But if you're using a Mac, you'll be disconnected from the meeting when you hit F5. So don't hit F5 if you're using a Mac. But again, if you want to ask a question, you're going to have to hit F5 or Escape to come back to the screen with the toolbar. And now I'd like to turn it over to James Butler. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. And hello, everyone. Welcome to this Rural Communities Initiative webinar on strategies for economic development through small business development and entrepreneurship in rural areas to improve service delivery to rural TANF programs. As I've mentioned on numerous webinars before, during the Rural Communities Academy back in September, the challenge of improving some of the economic development was identified by many of the rural communities as one of the most critical issues facing rural organizations serving TANF participants. As part of their technical assistance plans, sites expressed interest in learning more about effective strategies to create jobs and businesses, improve local economies, and increase opportunities for rural residents. These rural TANF agencies specifically expressed the need to learn more about current efforts to build small businesses to increase opportunities for TANF participants in underserved rural areas, innovative strategies and tools for entrepreneurship, strategies on how to maximize return on investment for creating small businesses, and efforts and guidance on funding and implementing these types of projects. Based on your interest that you expressed at the rural site, we've designed a series of technical assistance events that focus on the issues of economic development, the second of which is today's webinar on strategies for small business development in rural communities. Today's webinar, we will have some very knowledgeable speakers from three different programs discussing their experiences with small business development, entrepreneurship, and microenterprise to improve options for TANF participants and other individuals looking to expand opportunities in rural areas. As Jackie mentioned earlier, after the presentation, we will open up the lines for questions. We're going to go ahead and move on with our first speaker for today. He will be Mr. Jeff Reynolds, who is from the Rural Enterprise Assistance Project. Jeff is the program director of the Nebraska-based Rural Enterprise Assistance Project, acronym REAP, a program of the Center for Rural Affairs. The REAP program provides essential services for startup and existing small businesses in the rural areas of Nebraska. These services include business training, one-on-one technical assistance, counseling, networking opportunities, micro-lending, and loan packaging services. Roundtables of micro-entrepreneurs are formed in rural areas of Nebraska and are the supporting vehicle for the delivery of these services. Jeff brings an extensive small business management background to the REAP program, having most recently owned and operated his own convenience store. REAP's services also include a women's business center, the first such program in Nebraska, which continues to excel in reaching rural women entrepreneurs. Furthermore, REAP provides key business development services to rural Hispanic entrepreneurs through the expansion of the REAP Hispanic Business Center. REAP uses its existing infrastructure with business specialists located throughout the state to deliver the Women's and Hispanic Business Center services in conjunction with its current services to rural small business. Established in 1973, the Center for Rural Affairs is a private, nonprofit organization working to strengthen small businesses, family farms and ranches, and rural communities through action-oriented programs addressing social, economic, and environmental issues. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jeff Reynolds.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here today. As stated, I will give just a brief overview about the REAP program, and again, at the end, I'll be happy to answer any questions. As it was said in the introduction, REAP is a microenterprise development program. So what is microenterprise? Basically, it's a business with five or fewer employees. Microenterprise development programs provide business development services to both startup and existing small businesses. Typically, programs like REAP focus on underserved populations. Some programs across the country focus on a specific target population, for instance, like Hispanic entrepreneurs. The origins of U.S. Microenterprise programming has a very close connection to the 2006 Nobel Peace Prize winner Dr. Muhammad Yunus with the Grameen Bank. In the 70s, Dr. Yunus used a peer group borrowing approach. His first loan was for $42. To a woman in Bangladesh, which that loan was repaid. And from that experience in Bangladesh, that's where U.S. programming got its start. REAP was a peer lending model program from when the program started in 1990 through 1998, using pretty much the same philosophy as Dr. Yunus in forming peer lending groups and doing loans within that group called peer group borrowing. Just a little background on REAP. Again, REAP is a business development strategy designed to help small businesses in rural communities. REAP is known as a full-service, dual delivery service system and operates on a statewide rural basis. REAP is a program of the Center for Rural Affairs. The center has been in Nebraska since 1973. There's been lots of studies done on self-employment. Here's just a few statistics. 70% of the job growth in the 90s resulted from microenterprise businesses. 85% of the businesses in Nebraska are microenterprise-sized businesses. Over 90% of the businesses in rural counties are microenterprise businesses, so they are the driving engine here in this state. REAP started in 1990, again was started by the Center for Rural Affairs, and fills four key gaps: credit, education, networking, and technical assistance. Rural entrepreneurship is very, very important. Why it's so important to Nebraska. Nebraska is a very unique state and has a very large population spread over 500 rural communities. In this setting, self-employment plays a very significant economic and social role, as compared to some of the urban areas in this area. Again, in Nebraska, considering the 70 most rural counties, the primary source of employment is self-employment. There's not a lot of jobs through factories and other employers, so many times people create their own jobs through microenterprise. The importance of rural entrepreneurship, all the evidence points towards local self-employment being the most advantageous for rural communities. Many times, looking at low-income folks, that is many times their best option to find employment. Finding ways to help and promote local entrepreneurs is key to the overall economic future in our rural areas. Programs like REAP help in this process, but it's very, very important that the local community is a major participant and buys into the process. The survival of our rural areas depends upon a very strong small business sector, and typically everything else will flow from this. So the microenterprise sector plays a very important role with this. I think, as we all know, our country was founded on entrepreneurship. Currently, the country's going through some struggles economically. It's clear to me, anyway, that entrepreneurship will be the key vehicle that brings our country back to prominence where we want to be. And again, communities with a strong small business presence are more likely to draw larger businesses, other employers, and along with that, we are seeing many laid-off people starting businesses. So very important. As we take a closer look at the REAP delivery model, it's a very unique system. I've been very lucky to be involved with it since 1994. Again, REAP is a full-service dual delivery system. We offer both group and individual services. Very unique program that operates without walls. We use what we call a circuit rider approach. We have staff located all across the state of Nebraska in each region of the state, and we provide services at the entrepreneur's location. Again, we are a statewide rural program, and we also operate a REAP Women's Business Center and a REAP Hispanic Business Center. Taking just a quick look at the REAP map, you can see how the regions across the state are broken out. And again, we have every region of the state covered. There is a staff person in each region that implements the services of REAP. Taking a look at the four key gaps that REAP fills, we'll start with credit. What you see on the screen now are the loan products that REAP offers. First, a direct loan. These are loans up to $35,000. The national definition of a microloan is a loan up to $35,000. That is our maximum. We also have a very popular product called the Rapid Loan. Those are loans up to $5,000. And we give a interest break on those loans for the first two loans. Typically, we find with lower income clients and others, that's a very popular product, so we try to give as many breaks with that product as we can. Our peer group loans are somewhat a thing of the past. There was a time where REAP did nothing but peer group loans from 1990 through 99. It was a very, very effective process, but it's also very costly and time intensive as far as delivery goes. From my view, when I came into the program, that's exclusively what I did, was form peer groups and do peer loans and peer training. From my eyes, it worked perfectly, but in today's environment of funding and other things, it is tough to support and pay for that type of activity. Quick Grow Loan, there's a program in Nebraska called Grow Nebraska. We do all the loans for their program, so that's an exclusive product for their clients. We also have an innovative system called a REAP online lending system where entrepreneurs can go online and fill out their applications. It's set up so that if a person does not own a computer, they can go to the library and enter a username and password, and they can fill out their application over 90 to 120 days, whatever that takes. And also we offer loan packaging assistance for clients that need loans larger than what we offer. Uses and types of loans runs the gamut of service and retail businesses. We also loan to transportation businesses, crafters and artisans, some smaller manufacturers. Uses are typically equipment, inventory, working capital. Our loans cannot be used for down payment purposes or for the purchase of real estate. Education is another element that REAP fulfills. We provide small business management training, e-commerce training, training topics at group meetings. We have a number of round tables located across the state. We also supply regional workshops on a periodic basis, specialized training. Here recently, we've implemented training around QuickBooks that we've been doing across the state. We also offer an annual marketplace conference that's done yearly. Networking, very important. We form partnerships with local communities across the state. We also form associations or roundtables where folks want to form one of those. And through these groups, we provide access to REAP services. Also, we offer a REAP business update on a quarterly basis. We have an online member directory that allows members to see other businesses and also sell items online and many other resources. Very important part of what we do is called technical assistance or counseling. Again, we provide one-on-one assistance at the owner's location around business planning assistance, troubleshooting, cash flow and budget assistance, loan packaging assistance, and we also provide access and knowledge of all available service providers and loan funds in the state. Many times we play that part of connecting people to organizations and others that where they need to be connected. Just a quick look at the REAP program in general. On the current slide, you can see the REAP services that are offered through the REAP program. Again, we offer a Women's Business Center, which is the training arm of the REAP program, and we have a very extensive Hispanic Business Center. In Nebraska, there is a growing Hispanic population in the rural areas, so we provide all services to Hispanics as well. A quick look at the impact of REAP. In calendar year 2008, we counseled 355 clients. 20% were Hispanic. We trained a little over 1,800 clients. 28% were Hispanic. You can see that we did 51 loans through the REAP program for just about $500,000. We leveraged 20 other loans for close to $600,000. You can see the other numbers of business plans completed, referrals received, jobs created, and the number of low to moderate income individuals that we worked with. These next three slides are just examples of what I would call success stories or a spotlight on a business. All of these folks are low-income people that worked through the process and are all doing extremely well. First, you see Sandra Gutierrez from South Sioux City. She runs a bilingual consulting business. She received all of the services through REAP, and her business is growing. Next is Larry Harbor from Broken Bow, Nebraska. Larry started LB Custom Chrome and Detail. He received business plan assistance and loan packaging assistance. He was also our 2008 Center for Rural Affairs Entrepreneur Award winner, and his business is growing extensively. And the last example is Brad and Gina Babb. They own Sand Hills Glass and Garage Doors. They received a plethora of services from REAP. Their business is currently growing, and I understand they're actually coming back for another loan application here in the very near future. Just a few suggestions that I would have. Consider building strong collaborative relationships with microenterprise development programs. There are micro programs all across the state. Not to steal any thunder from the AEO speakers that are on the call, but I always go to microenterpriseworks.org, and that's where you can find where programs are located throughout the United States. So you can find the programs that are located in your state. Consider forming a small business roundtable. Takes a lot of work, but it's a very effective way to get people together and discuss ideas. Consider offering financial literacy training and an ABCs of starting a business workshop. We have found that these types of courses work really well, particularly for people that are not quite sure what they want to do or just want to learn the basics about running a business and how to manage money. Offering a business plan basics training is also a good idea. In many cases, micro programs will need to expand their focus to include working with larger numbers of TANF participants. From my experience, requires an extensive hand-holding through the process. Programs need to expand and specialize in certain programming, for instance, like bookkeeping, those types of things. Expanded and unique lending opportunities. Traditional loan products typically do not work, particularly when people have poor credit scores or they're trying to work out of bankruptcies that have been taken in the past. Need to have unique products that can work for those people. Building coalitions and partnerships with industries, just as an example, hairstyling industry, nail tech industry. There's many, I guess what I would call low-cost service businesses that make sense for people that don't have a lot of money to put into a business. For a person to get started in a business, those are two examples of businesses that have a very, very low cost that a person can do. I think it's important to remember that entrepreneurship is about passion, and it must be something that the entrepreneur loves. So it's I guess what I would call not a cookie cutter approach where we're going to have everyone be a nail tech. It's clearly up to the entrepreneur on what their passion is, and then it's up to them to go for it. But to me, it's all about what are their hobbies, skills, and interests. Once we determine that, is there a niche that they can fill? And again, is it something that they love to do? And I think with that, my time is about up. My contact information is on the screen. Feel free to contact me if I can ever answer a question or send information. And I think with that, Mr. Butler, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you very much, Jeff. We're going to go ahead and move on to our next speaker, who will be Dr. Mary Emery from the North Central Regional Center for Rural Development, National Coalition for Rural Entrepreneurship in Iowa. Dr. Emery is the Associate Director of the North Central Regional Center for Rural Development, where she works on a variety of initiatives related to rural development, including co-managing a coaching for community change initiative, conducting listening sessions on entrepreneurship, and using the community capital framework in evaluation and program planning. The Regional Rural Development Centers and the Extension Entrepreneurs and their community of practice have developed a learning community and dialogue around policies and practices that support entrepreneurship in rural America. The centers have held numerous sessions aimed at practitioners, lenders, entrepreneurs, and partners. The sessions were targeted to identify what's working in supporting entrepreneurship, as well as what needs to occur to create and sustain future entrepreneurial ventures, in rural America. The sessions encouraged conversation among participants who were asked to think about the four D's and appreciative inquiry. Discover what is working now. Dream what things like you would like to look if improved. Design strategies to reach these goals. And deliver by creating action plans and follow-up. The Extension Community of Practice has developed a resource site focused on rural entrepreneurs, funding needs, partnerships, and follow-up activities for participants. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Mary Emery.
Thank you, and good afternoon to everyone. My presentation is going to overlap a bit with Jeff, as we both want to take a little bit of time to talk about why should we focus on entrepreneurship. And can I have the next slide? What I want to talk about today in this 20 minutes is a little bit about why entrepreneurship matters, the new role for entrepreneurship and economic development, which may overlap a little bit with your future speaker, Deb Markley from the Center for Rural Entrepreneurship. What we've learned about what's working well in supporting entrepreneurship in rural America and how it might work better, and the focus on communities as incubators for entrepreneurial activities. And so one of the questions you might be asking is, what does this have to do with TANF and the kind of participants we're working for? And I think the key takeaway here is that successful entrepreneurs are not usually isolated individuals working by themselves. And oftentimes we look at the entrepreneur and we just focus on that person and what they're interested in. And what we're learning is that successful entrepreneurs are linked to groups. They are part of communities that foster entrepreneurship. And so we sometimes say it takes a village to raise a child. And we can also say from our experience about what's working is that it takes a village to grow a small business. It takes a village to create successful entrepreneurship. Next slide. So this is just a quote about the importance of entrepreneurship to economic development. What is entrepreneurship? Jeff went over some definitions. Here's two more definitions about entrepreneurship. Why is it important? Well, it appears like my arrow keys will work part of the time, but not all the time. Why is it important? Entrepreneurship is the primary driver of regional economic competitiveness. And some other figures that support the idea of entrepreneurship being important, if I could have the next slide, similar to those that Jeff gave you, is entrepreneurship is strongly associated with economic growth of all different kinds. These are some additional statistics. But can I have the next slide? But when we look at our rural communities and we look at the past history of economic development in these rural communities, what our economic development strategies have focused on is, first of all, exploiting natural resources, whether it's ag, oil, timber, mining, those kinds of things, and creating jobs around those kinds of resources, and then actually taking those materials out of rural areas and processing them elsewhere. Second strategy has been the notion of universal service, so the idea of getting electricity out to all the rural communities, so every farmhouse can have a washer and a dryer, those kinds of things, But we see a little bit of that in the current administration with their emphasis on rural telecom access. External subsidies, rural communities are often in line to get funding from EDA and other organizations for business incubators, for transportation, and other kinds of infrastructure. And primarily, people have focused a lot on industrial attraction. If we can only get this company to come here and bring 500 jobs or 100 jobs or whatever, then we'll have jobs for people and we'll be successful as a community. And this is a figure that the Center for Rural Entrepreneurship uses, and there's different figures depending on the year and the sources, but basically, if we're looking at trying to figure out some way to create jobs in rural America, we need to look at helping existing businesses expand and find ways to help new businesses start up. And as a result of the traditional rural economic development strategies, what we have is, next slide, please. We have a lot of out-migration. Jeff was talking about Nebraska, and in some places in Nebraska, the out-migration's been really significant. Because young people are moving out to go find other kinds of jobs, we have an aging population. One of the really dramatic impacts of this kind of approach to economic development is the declining income levels in rural communities. So a lot of our rural communities are much poorer than they were in the past, and thus there's a rise in poverty rates, high rates of unemployment and underemployment. A lot of people in rural America may have a job, but it doesn't pay well, it doesn't have benefits, and it doesn't use their full talent. And then we've actually seen shrinking economic diversity as shops on Main Street close up, small manufacturing close up, or in some cases where we don't have the out-migration and aging population, we have fast-growing, high-value real estate, and the focus is on service jobs. I was doing a training in Jackson, Wyoming, and I had to get to Salt Lake for a late morning plane, so I left Jackson around 6 in the morning, and that was really their rush hour, because no one who works in any of the jobs in Jackson can afford to live anywhere around Jackson, Wyoming. So you have all these people coming in at 6 in the morning to start the grills at the restaurants and to begin work at the hotels and those kinds of things. And that's not a real good living for those folks who live in rural America. It may be a great place for people to go and have a good time. Can I have the next slide, please? So one of the things that's happened is what we have is we have a lot of unemployment in rural America. If you look at the red spots here, this is where there's a lot of small business activity. And when we think about rural America and we think about rural communities, most of those communities were started by entrepreneurs, the hardware store, the grocery store. They weren't chains coming in. They weren't big corporations coming in. They were local people creating their own businesses to serve their community. There's still that history and that that need in rural America. But what's happened is, if I can look at the next slide, please, is that these rural businesses are not as profitable as the businesses in the larger cities. So if you look at the red here, it's kind of focused on some of the big metro areas. And we see that rural America is not the place where entrepreneurs and small business owners are making a really great living. So we've got the capacity. We haven't been able to really mobilize that capacity into more effective, better living styles for people. I have the next slide. So now what? So what we did is we wanted to find out what's going on in those little red spots in rural America so we could find out what's going on in those communities that really contributes to successful entrepreneurship. And as was mentioned, we used appreciative inquiry, which for a lot of folks, who live in rural America, we're used to hearing all the things that are wrong with our communities, and this is really focusing on what's working and how we can build on it. Have the next slide, please. So we did over 30 listening sessions all across rural America to ask people about what was working, why it was working, and how we could make it work better. So I'm just going to give you a little summary of those things so you can think about how some of these possibilities might work in your community. Next slide. So we worked with people from all different kinds of walks of life. This is actually in Illinois. Next one, please. This was one of the sessions we did in a tribal community. This is at United Tribes Tribal College in North Dakota. And for those people that are working in reservation-based camp programs where there is an interest in entrepreneurship, there's actually an organization called Onaban that has a curriculum called Indianpreneurship that's been very successful in a lot of different tribal communities. Next slide, please. So what's working? Well, in rural America, where there's a focus on developing entrepreneurs, finding ways for people who have an interest and the possibility to get into a system to find out how to make it work. One real successful project in Wisconsin is a boot camp. So instead of saying, you know, you have to take 13 weeks of next level or fast track, these folks, oftentimes couples, come Friday night and they work with their group until Sunday afternoon to kind of create the backbone of a business plan. Other kinds of entrepreneurship education, Jeff mentioned financial literacy and ABCs. One of the things we've learned is that oftentimes service providers, small business development centers, and those kinds of things have one educational product. And when I was talking to some of the college people who are working on entrepreneurship in Nebraska, they said what we've learned is there have to be multiple education projects because entrepreneurs come to us with different kinds of needs. And then a second thing that's become really important in a lot of rural America, and I think Nebraska has been one of the places to have some real successes, is transitioning businesses to younger entrepreneurs. So actually talking to that hardware owner about how someone else could be part of that business, take that business over instead of waiting until the person's no longer can do the business or finally wants to leave, and then there's no way to keep that business in town. The other thing that's working well in rural America is access to capital, and we learned a lot about different kinds of access to capital. Some places there's local investment clubs that support small businesses. Some places the Community Foundation has an endowment that's focused on helping small business and entrepreneurs. Partnerships with banks, revolving loans for non-traditional borrowers, just like Jeff mentioned, are all different kinds of capital products that can help small businesses and entrepreneurs get going. Next slide, please. Bringing entrepreneurs together, Jeff mentioned the importance of their roundtables, and what we learned is that entrepreneurs like to be part of flexible networks, clubs, marketplace, expos, those kinds of things. Sometimes they want to be around people who have similar business interests. Sometimes they want to be around people in their community that have similar needs. So business breakfasts, entrepreneur clubs, business clusters are all things that work. Business expansion programs, community where the community is set, it's really important for us to help the existing businesses here. So instead of talking about tax breaks for bringing a company in, we're going to talk about tax breaks for local businesses. And connected to that, mentoring, linking up successful entrepreneurs with those that want to expand, coaching opportunities, those kinds of things. Next slide, please. Engaging agencies. What the folks at the listening sessions told us is we're tired of this idea that you go one place and you get one answer and then you get sent someplace else and then you get a different answer. So we want to see more collaboration across the silos. We want to see the agencies be willing to customize services to the scale of the community. We want to see agencies that are able to do outreach and marketing of their services so more people know what's out there and what's possible. We want to see ways that agencies can support grassroots and informal systems. We want to see a continuum of care. We want to see that there's services for the person who's kicking the tires and thinking about it, as well as services for the entrepreneur that wants to grow, as well as services for someone who wants to retire and sell or transition their business. And they also said it's really important for services to attend to cultural differences and to be tolerant of new ideas. So we were talking to some kids in a boot camp in Wisconsin, low-income kids, and their idea of the great business was to be a tattoo parlor, and you could immediately see some of the older, more traditional folks rolling their eyes. But we have to be tolerant of these ideas and these possibilities that may be different from what we grew up with. Next slide, please. Helping communities learn to support entrepreneurship, that's a really important piece. If communities are interested in this, or people in the community start talking about this, what are the things that make it work at the community level? One thing is having a local champion, and that could come out of a TANF program, or it could be an agency that you partner with regularly. Finding ways to connect entrepreneurs to resources and expertise. We heard over and over again, it needs to be no wrong door. Wherever I go, I need to get the information that will help me take the next step. Engaging educational institutions, finding ways to do local and regional networking. And then changing the community attitude. There's a lot of discussion about, in our community, if somebody starts something, people will give them all the reasons why it's not going to work, and we need to help people in the community say, here's how I can help your business be a success. Next slide. And there's some other trends about economic development that really feed into this. There's a resurgence of buying locally, so people who have their favorite recipes or like to do gardening now have more opportunities to be successful entrepreneurs in those areas. Building of niche markets, local crafts, local food products are now things that people can use to build a business. The spirit of volunteerism, we're seeing an increase in that, and people's willingness to work at the community level to make more of these opportunities available. We're also seeing private resources being interested in supporting entrepreneurship at the local level. And finally, we're really seeing a lot of interest in encouraging young people. And one of the things that they've learned in Nebraska is that adults and young people oftentimes are not having the same conversation. That young people often want to come back to a rural area, but people have been telling them forever that there's no opportunities there. And instead, these young people are seeing that there are opportunities for small business and entrepreneurship at the community level. Next slide, please. So how could it work better? We need to get everybody on board. We need to look at developing a whole system so that people don't wander around trying to find the place that can give them the assistance that they need. We need to encourage more people talking about entrepreneurship as an option. And we need to be smarter about using technology to support these kinds of things in rural communities. Next slide, please. So we need to make sure that there's access to entrepreneurship education in every school. We need to calibrate services to rural and small communities and businesses. So, for example, the 13-week Next Level or Fast Track is not going to be appropriate for many people who are interested in entrepreneurship that need something more basic. So finding those services that match the people is really important. Focus on youth. Building those bridges between the silos, which is a role that a lot of you can help play in rural communities. And what the people at the listening session said is they want people who give grants and do programs to require collaboration across agencies. Next slide, please. So when you think about your agency and the agencies that you work with in a small community, what are some policy strategies that you can look at? Tax incentives to support entrepreneurship, finding ways to encourage the development of better data to support our planning and our work, recognizing that community solutions are unique. We don't need a policy that says every community has to do this way. Infuse entrepreneurship in all curriculum. In Scotland, they were looking at trying to do economic development after the first stages of devolution, and they noticed that their percentage of entrepreneurship was much lower than the rest of Europe, so they started a program, Entrepreneurship Cradle to Grave. People at the listening session said, we want to see the elimination of funding for industrial attraction. We want funding that's available for economic development to go to helping existing businesses expand and new businesses start up. We also need support for local and regional networks so that entrepreneurs can learn from each other, because they oftentimes say that's some of the most important information that they get. And again, require collaboration. Next slide, please. So part of the work that we're doing around entrepreneurship is let's get the SBDC and the other agencies that deal with small business together, and let's figure out how to do this work more effectively. And that's kind of the supply side approach to entrepreneurship. What a lot of the communities are telling us is we need to also focus on the demand side. We need to help communities understand that they can play a role in building successful businesses, and they can be a part of the success picture for local entrepreneurs. They can encourage new entrepreneurs. They can support existing entrepreneurs. They can invest in a range of different kind of entrepreneurial ventures, and they're critical to linking entrepreneurs to each other and to other resources. Next slide, please. So what's the impact of this focus on entrepreneurship? This is an example from Valley County, which when they started to focus on entrepreneurship, they were a community that had decades of population decline and per capita income decline. And over the course of working on this, 80 new jobs, $80 million in new business, increase in personal income, new investments, new people moving into the community. They also included leadership development, youth engagement, and philanthropy with their entrepreneurship efforts, and they're now able to show that does make a difference. So we can make a difference in rural communities if we think about what are the resources, what are the assets, how do we use them to build an entrepreneurial community. Next slide, please. I've included some resources that might be useful to you as you think about how you can support entrepreneurship in the communities that you work with. Next slide. On this slide, these are the reports from the listening sessions. So if you want to learn more about what people said and what they were interested in, you can go to those slides. And I would be happy, next slide, please. If you have any questions, if you want to email me, I'd be happy to answer your email. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Emery. We're going to go ahead and move on to our next two speakers, who will be Ms. Elizabeth Wilson and Natalie Woodruff from the Association for Enterprise Opportunity. Ms. Wilson is the Senior Director for the Association for Enterprise Opportunity, and Ms. Woodruff is a consultant with Enterprise and Rural Initiatives. The Association for Enterprise Opportunity, I'll refer to it as AEO, is a national leadership organization focused on microenterprise development by providing cutting-edge training, knowledge sharing, federal and state public policy and advocacy, and communication. AEO empowers a community of nearly 500 member organizations to be uniquely effective in serving the needs of micro entrepreneurs who do not have access to traditional sources of business education or capital. At AEO, Ms. Wilson has provided professional leadership and training in the development and, of nonprofit services and management, including program design, project planning, development budgeting, staff recruitment, marketing, and fundraising in her various positions. She has a strong knowledge of urban, economic, and small business development, and has done tremendous work in community development in Georgia. Ms. Woodruff has worked and advocated on behalf of rural people and communities for over three decades. For 3 years, 2006 through 2008, she managed the AEO Opportunities Rural Initiative, and in 2009 formed her own company called Rural Strategies Consulting. She also serves as a fellow with the RUPRI Center for Rural Entrepreneurship and as a rural consultant for AEO. Ladies and gentlemen, Elizabeth Wilson and Natalie Woodruff.
Do we have our speakers on the line?
Ms. Woodruff, you are
yes.
connected?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great.
All right. This is going to be somewhat repetitive, but it probably doesn't hurt to keep strumming the same chord. Microenterprise development, we want to talk about what it is, who it helps, how it works, why there is a need, and how you can tie it into your work. Next slide, please.
And this is Elizabeth Wilson. I'm sorry, you have two of us today. Natalie and myself will be doing this presentation together because Natalie has such a strong background in rural initiatives and is basically the national expert in all things rural microenterprise. So I wanted to make sure that both she and I had the opportunity to speak with you guys on today's call. As you know, Jeff has also gone over it. Jeff and Mary both have talked about what microenterprise is as a whole and given some of the background of microenterprise, particularly explaining kind of the concepts of microenterprise as it relates to the Grameen Bank and some of the, you all have probably heard about Dr. Yunus and his work. Microenterprise development is more of a holistic approach to microfinance, where microfinance in the international arena kind of concentrated on providing monies to communities. Microenterprise talks about embracing the entire individual as well as their business desires. We look at human development as well as economic development strategies working together to give people access to tools, capital, markets, skills, and just the general hand-holding support that they need to operate their businesses. As Jeff mentioned to you, when we talk about micro, we try to delineate that, the difference between micro and small. And if you'll notice on the first slide, I make sure that the word small is very, very tiny, because micro enterprises are any type of business that can be one person, five individuals, and they're small enough to get started with capital requirements of less than $35,000. And that $35,000 is kind of a standard for the field. Businesses that need larger capital requirements, we usually push them into the small business category, and those that are less than 35, we consider micro. Micro businesses also create employment, definitely create an employment for at least the owner of the business, and we consider that a job, self-employment as a job, and also it creates opportunities for other family members to be employed in that same business.
Hello, Ms. Woodruff. You
yes.
are still connected?
I am. So who does it help? We estimate that there are 2 million micro-entrepreneurs in the United States today. Next slide, please. And really, as I believe Jeff mentioned, you know, it's really about a passion. So if there's a passion there, then really anyone who wants to start or grow a business can be helped with microenterprise through microenterprise development services. Next slide, please.
Some of the populations that are targeted by microenterprise are people who need additional support services. Traditionally, in the United States, people don't have an easy track to entrepreneurship. There are usually several hurdles that they have to jump over. Most people are introduced to entrepreneurship late in life, sometimes even in the latter part of their careers after they've had jobs. So microenterprise services usually try to target those who are underserved, those who have not, they don't have the MBA, they haven't received an entrepreneurship education at the feet of parents who've given them a business. Usually people who are struggling are trying to find some extra support to grow their businesses. Some specific target groups that microenterprise programs around the country work with are people who are receiving some sort of public assistance, minorities, women, what we call the working poor, people who have jobs but still qualify as very low income in the United States, also TANF recipients. And some programs specifically target young people, refugees, homeless individuals, incarcerated and ex-offenders, and rural people and in rural areas. I wanted to just highlight a few of the findings that we've found as far as the field serving and working with TANF recipients. And one of the studies that I'm looking at specifically here was done by the Aspen Institute a few years ago. The briefing was Aspen Welfare to Work Research Briefing Number 2. And some of the findings were very key that I thought we wanted to possibly talk about in the Q&A session later on. A lot of TANF recipients in rural communities and across the country are already running businesses. Some of them might be running them under the table. Some of them might be not licensed. And some of them don't even consider them businesses. They might consider it a hustle or a way to just make some money. But we're finding that a lot of people that you might be serving are already doing some type of business. They just might be doing it very informally. We also found that people are patching employment with self-employment, meaning they're bringing money in from some sort of business and also working a traditional job, even if it's a low-income job. And again, when I mentioned the working poor, that's been one of the ways that the working poor have found to meet some of their economic needs, to take the money from their business and add it to the money from their low-paying job to pay for their basic the basic services that they have in their life. Another finding, sadly, that we found is that there's a lot of tension between the microenterprise community and the work-first or welfare-to-work communities. I think someone mentioned, maybe Mary mentioned earlier, about the silos of communication and how programs don't necessarily work together and potentially collaborate on the end results. So we know as a field that we have a job to do to educate ourselves on the issues facing the TANF communities, and also to work to educate those who are providing direct services to TANF recipients so we can better serve the need. There are also a lot of barriers to microenterprise training as a vocational training consideration. Even though a lot of the laws do allow microenterprise training to be considered, a lot of caseworkers are not familiar with this, and they would tend to steer someone who says they wanted to take a self-employment class as a vocational track away from that. So we know there are a lot of barriers. We know that there are a lot of miscommunications and a lot of dialogue that needs to happen between the two communities about these issues. And also time is a factor. That sometimes people time out of their TANF support before they're able to get their business up and running and off the ground. We know because in the United States it is not easy to start a business. For any of those who watched a David Letterman show a few years back, there was a small child who had tried to open up a lemonade stand and the police shut her down because she didn't have a license. Well, if that's the problem, to just have a lemonade stand legally in the United States, what would it take for someone to actually run a legitimate business. So we know it takes time. That's one of the issues that we know the TANF recipients have to consider when they are trying to continue with the support and continue with the services that they receive under TANF, and also trying to start a business. Sometimes the time factor, those clocks are not ticking together. Some of the types of businesses that we're talking about when we talk about microenterprise, just a variety, but they all would kind of fit into that category of startup capital of less than $35,000. Repair services, cleaning services, specialty foods, arts and crafts businesses, clothing, textiles, computer technology, child care. One of the things that we don't have on here are green businesses. That's, again, a lot of these types of industries specifically are suitable for micro enterprise development. Why is there a need? Why isn't there a need? There's so many reasons to consider microenterprise and small business development. These are just a few of them. Things have changed. The entire economy has gone through a time warp, and we're all facing issues now. Think about those who were least supported already and what they're now facing. Not only have changes come to our entire community, just the job situation for everyone is something that has to be considered. We're losing jobs, not only middle-class jobs, but also lower-wage jobs and higher-wage jobs. So everybody's looking for a solution. There are also a lot of issues that need to be taken into account, the way that people work. And as we noted earlier, a lot of women are coming into microenterprise development because they want to work around their family issues, life issues, health issues. All these things have to be taken into account, and there needs to be a better balance of work and life. And sometimes self-employment is a solution to making that balance a little bit more suitable. The population is aging. People are retiring earlier and are more viable and vital in their latter years, and they want to do something with their life, so they don't want to sit down. And a lot of them, because, again, the 401s that have decreased or disappeared and little nests that were set aside are now empty, have to consider other ways of developing their financial income. With the growth in immigration here in the United States, those who are coming from other countries who really consider self-employment as a first choice versus employment services because that's what they are used to, that's what they were doing before they came to the United States, and they want to continue to do that work. And also emerging niche markets that need to be developed across the country. I mentioned green earlier. That's going to be a growth area for microenterprise, and we're excited about the opportunities that may come from that. Natalie, is there anything else I missed in the need category?
No, I think you've got it.
Okay. Some facts about microenterprise. As far as the Association for Enterprise Opportunity being the trade association for this industry in the United States, our association has over 500 member programs across the United States. Sadly, that's about a fourth of the number of programs that should be in existence currently, and probably about 1% of the programs that should be existent in the next few years, because the need for microenterprise service is so critical now with the issues that we've already gone over. There are going to be more people who need support in creating a business now probably than ever before. So there need to be programs strategically placed around the country and available so that these budding entrepreneurs have a place to go when they need support, and they have access to the services provided by microenterprise programs across the country. Some of those services, again, that we've gone over earlier, are providing some sort of business and technology and technical assistance training. Access to people who can answer a question or people who can put you on the right track is going to be a solution versus going to taking a class at a university for 2 or 3 years to start a business. Access to capital. That $35,000 sounds like a little bit of money until you're trying to actually start and grow a business. We see that a lot of micro-entrepreneurs only need a couple $100 sometimes, $500, sometimes $5,000. They really don't need a lot of money to start the business that they're interested in, but they do need access to that capital, and they do need it when they need it. Also, because of the unique ways that banks are starting to play with people's credit and credit scores, more people are less able to access capital now than ever before. One of the things we found in the field is that people have traditionally financed their businesses by using their credit cards, particularly women and other people who don't traditionally go to banks. Now, with credit cards cutting balances whether you've done anything or not other than miss a payment or been late by a day, that is cutting the opportunities for people to even use their traditional methods such as credit cards to finance and grow a business. So microenterprise programs have a unique set of underwriting criteria. They have unique loan funds. They have money set aside specifically for businesses that have credit problems or don't have credit at all, and those funds are ready and available to be utilized to grow businesses. The last thing is access to markets. We know that even in the international community, being able to access a larger market beyond the local community is essential for a growing business. And a lot of rural businesses have been able to grow and develop because they've been able to expand their business to a market beyond their community through use of technology, through sending their products to other places to be sold, and also to bringing services directly to them through some sort of portal to help to grow that business. Does it work? Is there a reason to do this? Yes, we know it works. Microenterprise is not new. It's been around as an American institution for over 20 years. It's an import, and some of the best practices from the international communities have been brought over to the United States and have been utilized to create the support services needed for entrepreneurs in the United States. We've also found that the best way is to really, I think Jeff mentioned it earlier, Mary mentioned, to create programs that are suitable to the target population that's being served. So it's not a direct import. What we've done is try to take the best of what's available as far as training, access to capital, access to market, and to incorporate those in individual programs around the country so that people can really utilize the services that they need the most. We know microenterprise works to reduce poverty. It increases income. Again, think of that patching comment that I made earlier. It helps to build sustainable businesses. It helps support communities so that businesses can stay in that community, and it's cost effective. Comparatively, to help someone start a business has been equal or a little bit less than helping them to retrain for a job. So we have a lot of studies, and I'll give you some information on the back end of the presentation on where you can pull down some of the research that's been done on microenterprise over the last 20 years or so. Microenterprise programs have had a direct impact on the economy as a whole. We're creating jobs, we're building assets, we're helping people to increase their economic literacy, which is so important. Again, these are not things that we're teaching in the schools we should be, but until we can ramp up the educational opportunities and entrepreneurship and economic literacy in the schools, microenterprise programs are suited and ready to help. Whether the business is small, whether it's self-employment, sole proprietorship, we found that there are a variety of services being offered through programs that do help people get on that road to self-sufficiency. For those on the call and those who are participating in today's program, one of the words, if you don't take anything away know, collaboration is key. Working together, connecting, dialoguing, sharing information, partnering up is important, and that's going to be a solution so that we can all work together to grow these businesses and to grow our economy. Also, bring in people to help. Bring in experts in the field of business, those with technology expertise, those who are comfortable serving certain populations, enlisting volunteers who have the same passion for business. Bringing us together, having dialogue together, is going to be extremely important. We tried to make it as easy as possible to help people find microenterprise programs that already exist by going to our website, www.microenterpriseworks.org, and you can click on any of the states in America and identify the programs in that area. Again, I'm sad that we probably don't have enough programs, and people still have to go a little bit further than they need to and struggle a little bit more than they should to find a conveniently located program. But hopefully, over the next few years, we'll grow the industry just to make it more entrepreneurship training, education services, a little bit more accessible to people around the country. Beyond our website, I think someone else had mentioned before, fieldus.org has publications on welfare to work strategies, on some of the research that's been done previously around TANF recipients who have accessed businesses, and longitudinal studies to talk about the process and the support services that they needed. Our website has many of the success stories and successful programs that can be replicated, contact information for programs around the country who might be interested in working with you if you're interested. And you can always contact AEO just for general questions about microenterprise. We're having a conference in about less than a week, and we hope to bring together a lot of the partners to, again, discuss the field of microenterprise, what we can do as an association to help to grow the field, and what we can do as a team in collaboration with other organizations to meet some of the economic needs of our country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Elizabeth and Natalie. Do we have any additional comments from any of the speakers?
No.
Okay, if not, operator, I believe we can now open the lines up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You'll hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you'd like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. Once again, as a reminder, to register for a question, press the 1 followed by the 4. And it seems there are no questions at this time.
We do have one quick question for Dr. Emery first from the live meeting. And someone just wanted to know if you could repeat the name of the organization for tribal programs that you mentioned.
Oh, okay. It's Onaban. And if you Google Onaban, you'll get their website. It's just onaban.org. They're located in Oregon.
Can you spell that?
O-N-A-B-A-N.
Okay. O-N-A-B-E-N.
Let me double check.
O-N-A-B-E-N.
Yes, B-E-N.
Well, this is Louisa Fuller with ICF, and I actually do have a question in terms of, for Jeff and for Elizabeth and Natalie. When you suggest that people kind of give different trainings rather than do the typical business school program, et cetera, who are these different types of workshop presenters or mentors or trainers that you actually have go out and work with these rural entrepreneurs, and how do you find them in states where there may not be a network or an organization?
This is Natalie Nguyen. I was running a microenterprise program in rural New Hampshire many years ago. What we did was we began with, we were primarily serving rural women, finding successful business women in our region and asking them to come in and share their stories and what they felt were the most critical, you know, kinds of support that, that they could use as they were starting up. And then asking those experts to continue to be available to our emerging business owners. But I think that in any community, you can find people who are invested in sharing their success with others. But I think also universities. I mean, there are places where, you know, people who know accounting or lawyers who understand the legal structures of businesses. You know, there are people who have pieces of the overall information that's needed for someone to successfully operate a business.
And this is Jeff Reynolds. I would agree with what Natalie said. And we've, in Nebraska, we have no problem finding people willing to step up to the plate and share their expertise. I mentioned QuickBooks earlier. When we wanted to roll that training out, we found three to four what I would consider an expert in that field, and just seemed to be not a problem finding people willing to do that.
And this is Elizabeth. There are training of trainer opportunities also for people who are interested in providing entrepreneurship training or economic literacy training or micro-lending training. There are training programs around the country that allow you to send potential individuals who are interested in becoming the trainers for programs or communities together, and they have curriculums that exist that you can bring into your community to create trainers if there aren't any that are easily accessible.
That's good to know. And I actually have a follow-up question that came from that. Another program that runs out of the Administration for Children and Family is at HHS. It's called the Assets for Independence, and they run individual development accounts or savings accounts for low-income individuals where they actually get a matched savings account made up from federal, state, and other local community organizations. And I was wondering, in y'all's experience, and that you can either go to home ownership education or starting their own small business. And have y'all had any interaction with any of those grantees or seen anyone participating in that program as well as getting a small business loan?
This is Natalie. Yes. I mean, my former organization we had a number of people who were building IDAs to support their businesses. And it was especially true for, at one point we were working with high school students who were developing those accounts so that when they graduated they could start their own businesses with those dollars.
In Nebraska, it's been more in the urban areas that have used the IDA approach. But it's definitely something that that the rural areas definitely need to take a look at. It's definitely viable.
Okay. And in Georgia, in Atlanta, I also ran a program that worked directly with TANF recipients who also we had a special waiver under TANF where they could participate in the IDA program to purchase equipment or inventory for their businesses. So it is, again, a viable possibility to consider to start an IDA program to help individuals who are interested in financing their business that way.
Thank you. Operator, do we have any questions on the phone?
We do have one question queued up from the line of Nicole Polak. Please proceed.
Good morning. It's morning here in California. I was wondering, could you please provide the contact information for the Train the Trainer program? I'm not sure that we have any resources here for microenterprise development or those that can actually provide those types of trainings.
It would probably be easiest if you wanted to go to AEO website. We would have resources there as well as the fieldus.org website that lists the different types of training offered by the First Step Fast Track with the Kauffman Foundation. There are also, Natalie helped me out with the...
Core 4?
Yeah, Core 4 is one that specifically is kind of was geared toward rural populations. There are probably 10 different types of training or trainer services provided by member programs of AEO. So feel free to go to our website or to send me or Natalie an email, and we'll try to pull that list together for you.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And there are no further questions at this time.
Okay, and I believe it looks like we have two questions that are coming in on the web.
Those are actually the same as what was just asked. So.
Okay, great. Great.
Hi, this is Natalie. I'll just add one more resource to that list. If any of you are working with people with disabilities, I would encourage you to Google the Disabilities Fund. The Abilities Fund, thank you. They've, you know, developed both training and resources to support people with a variety of disabilities.
Thank you. So if there are no more questions, I just want to take a moment to thank everyone for attending this webinar. Special thanks to all of our speakers today for sharing your expertise regarding your experiences with rural economic development initiatives that serve TANF participants. As in the past, there will be a PowerPoint presentations will be available and an audio recording from today's webinar later this week. Also, if you have any other questions, feel free to email anyone on the Rural Communities Initiative team. So on behalf of the Office of Family Assistance, I thank you again and have a pleasant day.